The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPont.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. A plan that aims to put San Antonio on a steady path to reduce greenhouse gases that contribute to global climate change is being criticized from both sides. One group says it's too weak. The other side says it's too costly to businesses and consumers. The draft Climate Action Adaptation Plan outlines what the city, its utilities, and San Antonians can do to decrease dependence on carbon-based fuels. Earlier today, I spoke with Mayor Ron Nuremberg about the plan.
Climate Ready SA and the Climate Action and Adaptation Plan is driven by the community of San Antonio. Hundreds of citizens coming together to talk about how we need to protect the sustainability, the viability of our future here. It's a set of goals, not a set of dictates or restrictions. We've set a goal of cleaner air, lower carbon emissions over the next 30 plus years. And, you know, technology and cleaner vehicles and other things that are very much becoming part of our landscape are all considered in the plan. But over the next month or so, we're going to have public input, and we need people to weigh in because it's going to challenge us with difficult decisions no matter who you are or what kind of industry you work in. We all have to work together to create a more sustainable future for San Antonio, for the benefit not just for our children and our grandchildren's quality of life, but for our economic viability. This is a high priority for our citizens. It's a high priority for our economic future.
What are your concerns about climate change and also how San Antonio can address it with the San Antonio Climate Plan? Lots of ways for you to get into our conversation. You can call in at 210-614-8980, and you can also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. How is San Antonio going to deal with the major challenge of our age? We're joined by Doug Melnick, the Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio, and Nils Moe. He is the Managing Director of the Urban Sustainability Directors Network. And again, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. So, Doug Melnick, give me the wrap-up capsulization of what is this plan.
Sure, and thanks for having us on. Back in 2017, Mayor and Council passed a resolution in support of the Paris Climate Agreement, basically saying, how do we reduce our emissions that are contributing to climate change, and how do we prepare our community for those changes? I think the mayor said it very well, is, this is about our quality of life. This is about air quality, public health outcomes, transportation options for our citizens, economic competitiveness, good jobs, all under the umbrella of climate. I think at the end of the day, one of the things that we try to tell our community is we're already doing this work. There's a lot of work in the area of renewables and transportation. We're just putting it through this this lens of greenhouse gas reductions and preparedness.
Nils Moe, is this happening through other cities across America?
Thanks, David. Good afternoon. Yes, it is. I run a network of over 200 cities and counties across the U.S. and Canada, and these same challenges and opportunities that San Antonio is working with, we're seeing across our membership at large, absolutely.
And how are other cities addressing that?
Well, I think they realize that we've got about 10 to 12 years. Science shows us we've got 10 to 12 years to course correct, and it's going to take full partnership, collaboration across all actors, societies, states, cities, businesses, universities, you name it. So, yeah, thankfully, cities like San Antonio are stepping up to work with their communities. And, yeah, I think one of the key levers in this challenge is to create a climate action plan, a roadmap for action over the next 20 to 30 to 40 years.
This is really hard stuff because we know the science. It's out there. Too much carbon in the atmosphere is changing the way the climate works, and something needs to be done. But then again, there are many forces out there involved in the economy that don't want to see these major changes happen. A lot of rhetoric out there, scare tactics about how these types of plans want to rip apart the economy. on create a super governmental state that want to oversee all of your actions. How do you proceed with taking action that's actually going to create changes and have some results, positive outcomes, without falling into some of these traps that scare people into not doing anything, Doug Melnick?
Sure, and I think that's one of the real keys that we're working on right now is really trying to explain what this plan is and what it isn't. This is a high-level framework. It provides that path. There's a series of strategies around how do we improve efficiency in our transportation system, in our buildings. As the mayor had mentioned, there's no mandates. Each one of these strategies, before we move into implementation, there's going to be continued dialogue and analysis and engagement with the community. I think the other really important thing is this isn't necessarily new funding needed to make this happen. As I mentioned, there's work that's being done around ConnectSA. There's work that's being done by CPS on rolling out additional renewables and cleaning the grid. This is simply taking a look at how we prioritize what we have and how we leverage it. And then I think the other thing is there's definitely a business case to be made for taking these steps. At the end of the day, if we work with business leaders and building owners and provide them information have them learn about the benefit of just simply knowing their energy consumption in the building. Studies have shown just knowing your energy use, that building can reduce its emissions and energy consumption anywhere from 3 to 8%, which is money in that building owner's pocket that they can use to reinvest in their business. So there's a business case to be doing this work.
San Antonio has an advantage with the municipally owned CPS Energy and also the municipally owned SAWS, San Antonio Water System. That's a tremendous advantage that other cities don't have. So, Nils Moe, when you look at San Antonio with these two utilities under the city control, does that mean that San Antonio can be a leader?
Absolutely. I think I think where we're seeing great success is where cities are working in alignment with their utilities, their energy providers. And I think, San Antonio has a great opportunity to work with their utility and as Doug said, realize a clean energy future, an innovative future where we're seeing a lot of our cities who are reducing their emissions, but their GDP growth is up as well. So I think there's precedent out there to show that this work is good for business, good for the health of communities.
So Doug Melnick, how are CPS Energy and SAWS playing a role here?
So SAWS and CPS have been very much involved in the entire process, as well as all our institutional partners, because at the end of the day, this isn't just a city plan. The city is not going to move this thing forward. It needs to be all of our partners in the community as a whole. I think when we start talking about CPS, energy generation is a big nut. I think we've heard loud and clear from different stakeholders about how aggressive that we need to be regarding some of those fossil fuel assets. I think where we are with the plan is we still need some more data. We still need to better understand the implications of shutting down some of these fossil fuel units before setting a point in the sand and saying this is when we are going to shut those down. The plan does say that we need to clearly and aggressively decarbonize. We need to focus on coal, but we need to have additional analysis before we can come to council.
Looking at coal to get away from coal.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And so we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We're going to dig into some of the details about what is in San Antonio's climate plan, the different categories that's involved, what this means for the citizens and your lifestyle and reliability of energy. And the number to call in, we got questions and comments, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about San Antonio's climate action and adaptation plan. Some groups, some environmental activists feel the plan that's been proposed right now could go further. They want to abandon coal as a fuel by CPS Energy by 2025 and go for local carbon neutrality by 2040. But others say that's too aggressive and would put a pinch on San Antonio's availability of cheap and reliable energy. But can we get there from here? What is reasonable? What does the community want? Right now we have a comment period that's open until February 25th about the San Antonio Climate Plan. You can call in right now, ask your questions, and give us your comments, 210-614-8980. We've got Doug Melnick with us, the Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio, and Nils Moe, he's a Managing Director for the Urban Sustainability Directors Network. So there are five categories, Doug. Can you kind of go over what they are and what's in them?
Sure. So on the other thing to consider is the plan covers two components of climate. It's the mitigation, how do we reduce our emissions, and then the adaptation, how do we prepare our people, our institutions for those impending changes. So when we start looking at the categories of the greenhouse gas reduction component, you know, it's really looking at what those sources are. When we look at San Antonio, similar to many other cities, 85% of our emissions come from buildings, the energy that's being supplied to buildings, electric and natural gas, and then transportation.
So when you say that's like keeping them cool, basically?
It's heating, it's cooling, it's just the electric that's going in to run the lights. It's basically everything that's powering those buildings. So when we look at some of the categories, it's around building energy consumption, it's around transportation energy consumption, it's around sort of waste and recycling that's being generated, because at the end of the day, waste that ends in our landfill decays and emits methane. We're also looking at issues around education and engagement, and then also around sort of like natural ecosystems and biodiversity.
And so There's a lot there, and you can say, oh, we've got methane coming from the landfill compared to what's happening with trying to keep our buildings lit and cool and warm. That's where most of the energy is going to.
Correct.
So if you want to direct the limited amount of resources that we have to try and get the biggest bang for our buck, I mean, it would be like, let's start making sure our buildings are insulated and that we are able to reduce the power need for that, right?
Correct. And the plan does prioritize near-term and long-term actions, focusing primarily on buildings and transportation. You know, I think that the one thing I'd say in terms of how aggressive we are, the plan is based in science. Those strategies that are in the plan were selected based upon stakeholder and community involvement, as well as greenhouse gas reduction potential, and they add up to where we need to go. But you know, if we start looking at building energy use, yeah, the low-hanging fruit is how do we make sure that building owners are, you know, are taking a look at their energy consumption, and we're tying them to the existing energy efficiency rebate program that CPS has. Securing and tightening their envelope, replacing incandescent lights. There's lots of simple things that we can do now. And the one thing I would say is we've seen that we're making progress. Between 2014 and 2016, our emissions have gone down. Greenhouse gas emissions have gone down 10% already.
You're talking about the city?
The overall community as a whole. So the key is making sure we're continuing in that positive direction.
Well, we knew that that was happening nationwide, and then but it went up last year.
Nationally, but I think for our, we did a 2014 greenhouse gas inventory for the community, and we just did a 2016 and saw a 10% reduction.
And Nils Moe, with the Urban Sustainability Directors Network, you can give us a national view of what's going on, and you're working with a lot of different cities and counties, governmental agencies trying to get to this point. So, you know, we're not getting a lot of leadership on this issue from the federal government because, you know, who we have in the White House, this is not their thing. And so we're having to do this on a citywide, basically a very, very local government basis. But while that might seem difficult to some, but it could it be an advantage because these are really where the changes need to take place?
That's right. That's right, David. And yeah, I think cities and counties, they control their city planning, their building standards, their permits, public transport, waste management, zoning, et cetera. These aspects and levers are critical and important to climate mitigation and working with climate adaptation. So I think our cities, our counties are front of these issues, but they also have the levers and the tools to make these changes. So I think that's where we're seeing the innovation right now.
And so Doug Melnick, can you address it too? Like what's happening in San Antonio?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, what's really interesting about the work we're doing, and I think really making sure that the community and leaders understand is it's becoming more and more commonplace. You know, this is not a unique plan that the city of San Antonio is rolling out. And it's not just big cities like Portland, Boston, New York. We're talking about, you know, Dubuque, Iowa, Cleveland's, Flagstaff, Arizona, in a red state. And currently, as we speak right now, Dallas and Houston are beginning development of their own.
Yeah, they're in a
plan.
Red state too.
Exactly. And so, you know, this is definitely the trend that we're seeing. And I think it's because, you know, it's not just because the climate science is there. I think it's because these cities are already doing the work. A lot of times I just think we're just putting a new metric on the work that we're doing and tracking and being able to make adjustments as we go forward. But, you know, when I think about this issue, I look at my kids and I just think about that future. You know, what does it mean? And trying to do everything that we can to secure it. And particularly if the actions that we are talking about implementing are not simply about climate, if it's about air quality, if it's about our economy, if it is about public health outcomes, if it's about making sure that our seniors and our low-income residents are safe and secure and our community continues to thrive, that's really what this is about.
But what about what businesses or owners are concerned with, that they agree that we need to do something about the climate, that there is a problem, but they're worried that this is going to fall on their backs and we're going to lose economic competitiveness in order to deal with something that may or may not actually result in some sort of change with way things are working around with a global climate.
Sure, and that's it's a really legitimate concern, and I think this plan sets a pathway. It doesn't dictate every single action that's going to go forward, which I know makes some people uncomfortable, but I think key to this is continued dialogue with the business community. I mean, the business community knows their business, and I think one of the things that I'm fairly certain is many local businesses and regional businesses are already doing work that we're not even aware of that's already leading to this effort. So I think we need to really sit down, learn about what they're doing, what's working, and really how can the city and different partners help support them in this transition that we're looking for.
But Nils Moe, with your national view, I mean, there are cities out there that have planted a flag and have said, we're going to be carbon neutral by 2050. San Antonio has not made that promise. But how can they do that? And why is San Antonio, can we do that too if we decided that's important to us?
Yeah, and just to give you a sense of the sort of the national perspective here, you know, of our members, 200 cities and counties across the U.S. and Canada, we did a recent poll. About three quarters of those members have some sort of GHG reduction goal. About half of our members polled have some sort of GHG reduction goal of at least 80% by 2050, so a carbon neutral goal. So I think more and more of our members are aligning themselves with these Paris-based or the Paris Agreement-aligned goals. So it's hard work. It's going to be a hard road to that goal, but I think more and more we're realizing that that's the science that we have to pin these plans to.
But some cities have done that, right? I know there's like Boulder, Colorado, a few others have said, sure, we're going to go carbon free by 2050. They're investing in all renewables, they're looking at wind, they're looking at solar. This is something that other cities are claiming can be done, but San Antonio is not there yet. I mean, what do they know that we don't know, or vice versa?
Yeah, I'll lean on Doug for the local perspective there. But you're right. There are, you know, Minneapolis is committed to 100% renewable energy for their community by X date certain. Boulder is pushing the envelope, and I think that's the beauty of our network is that we do have the political alignment, the resource alignment, who can push that envelope, and will help accelerate those who we can watch and learn from in that process. But we'll defer to Doug on the local.
Yeah, all right, Doug, what's going on?
Well, and so what I would say is, you know, one, I think some of these cities have been working on this longer in a formal sort of climate action framework. So I think one of the things that we've really been focused on has been the community dialogue and education and awareness. You're really raising the level of understanding of what the issue is and why we're doing this. And I think moving forward, that's going to be key. I think our community understands to a degree, but being able to tie it to a plan that sets a very specific target is something new for us. I think San Antonio is poised to take this big step that, you know, and it's, and again, it's not about us keeping up with the Joneses nationally or internationally. It's about what's best for our community, what's best for San Antonio. This plan is unique to San Antonio. It very much reflects on our heritage, on our culture. And I think the pathway. Well,
we don't have a heritage and a culture of burning coal, or that's not our.
But I think it's in terms of something as simple as highlighting the cultural heritage associated with our historic building stock and the inherent value in that in terms of the efficiency of using those buildings instead of building new. I mean, I think, you know, at the end of the day. San Antonio has to figure out what that path forward is with this plan and whatever form it ends up at council in April.
Okay, I've got a caller. Let's go to Akeem. Akeem, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to know, I mean, I heard it that it was said that, you know, coal is not really in our culture, but what is in our culture is factory farming and eating massive amounts of meat, and how factory farming contributes to climate change and global warming, and how if we address that and went towards more of a plant-based diet, then that would reduce the factory farming, which has a huge impact on climate change and global warming. I didn't know if that had been mentioned, but I wanted to bring that up.
All right, Akeem, thanks for bringing that up. Has not been mentioned. It comes down to personal choices. Yep. The city can't make a rule about how many steaks you can eat, you know, in your lifetime, but what can it do?
Yeah, so it's in our conversations with stakeholders and the community, it didn't come up that often. So basically the plan's designed around sort of emission sources. Where are the emissions coming from? And they're either local or they're outside our city boundary. That falls into a category called Scope 3, and that's basically anything that we're consuming locally, their emission sources come from outside San Antonio. We're not quantifying those as a part of our plan. That's not part of the standard methodology that we're using. The plan does call for sometime in the near future to undertake a Scope 3 inventory where we can get a sense of what that sort of overall induced emissions are from all of our activities, whether it's where we're sourcing our food or any of the materials that we use in our daily lives. So I think that's going to be a conversation that we're going to have going forward.
And Nils Moe, can you talk about, you know, those types of options that are in front of people? If you are a carnivore, if you eat meat, then you are also have to recognize people don't get that connection. But if they do become more aware that consumption is connected to climate change, will that bring about behavioral change?
Yeah, I think, you know, the notion of sustainable consumption is something that is something that our members are talking about. And I think there are a lot of challenges around how we think about how as a society we're consuming. And yeah, I agree. We need to, everything needs to be on the table at this point. You know, science tells us we've got to turn, you know, everything should be on the table to discuss, and the piece is huge. But as you say, you know, the human behavior piece of this puzzle is a big one. We can create wonderful policies, bring in all sorts of technology, but at the end of the day, it's a lot of our habits that, you know, we need to shift in a more climate smart way.
All right, we're talking about San Antonio's Climate Action Plan, Climate Action and Adaptation Plan. We're joined by Doug Melnick with the City of San Antonio Office of Sustainability, Nils Moe. He's with the Urban Sustainability Directors Network. We invite you to call in with your questions and comments about how fast or how slow should San Antonio be going towards carbon neutrality. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Are you ready to accept personal responsibility for trying to save the planet? I don't know. Call in. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio is expected to see many more hotter and hotter days in the future if things hold steady with the climate change, global warming. That means we're going to have 4 months out of the year where we will be seeing triple-digit temperatures. Temperatures could reach 112, 120 degrees. That would be regularly, and it will be so hot that airplanes won't even be able to lift off from the airport. This is the future of San Antonio. This is the future of a lot of the Southwest. Other parts of the nation will also see dramatic changes with the climate change. Parts of the coastline will be underwater. This is all not just here to scare you, but this is the reality if we keep putting more carbon into the air. Sea levels will rise, the polar caps will melt, and there will be a massive disruption to the economy and to the way humanity operates. Or we could get ahead of the problem and make some tough choices now and figure out what can be done, what are some easy solutions, things that won't be so painful, like insulate our buildings, switch to electric vehicles, find other ways to generate electric power. We have the science to do that. We have wind, we have solar, we also have nuclear. You know, that's also part of a way we generate power without creating emissions. What do you want to see happen? What's the stakes? What can be done here in San Antonio? What can be done with other cities in cooperation with other cities around the nation? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Let's get Steve on the air. And Steve, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, everyone. Listen, I've seen some statistics published by the government, the federal government labor statistics, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they forecast photovoltaic installers to be an increasing job and in demand. So with that in mind, what does this adaption plan speak to with respect to new economic development or opportunities, sort of the plus side of introducing renewable energy, these types of technologies? How will that affect our future economy and drive new jobs?
All right, Steve, we hear about a Green New Deal. This is a moonshot program to try to proposal in Washington, D.C., talking about creating economic opportunity by switching the economy over to a sustainable energy. Doug Melnick, are there opportunities for San Antonio?
Absolutely, and that's a really excellent point. And I think the plan can go further on that positive economic impact. And I think that's something that we need to look at further, because at the end of the day, when we start talking about this the shift, particularly in the energy sector, we know that wind and solar are good paying jobs. And there is, as was mentioned by the caller, there is going to be the growing need. I think key to the conversation that we need to have locally is, what does that mean to San Antonio? And I think that's, I'm going to go back to the office and start looking at the plan and figuring out how do we start boosting that message, because I think that's core to what we're talking about. This shouldn't just be presented as a potential burden to our economy, but as a positive net gain.
And Nils Moe with the Urban Sustainability Directors Network, are you paying attention to these opportunities? Are there smart cities that are at the cusp of, of what's happening here with economic opportunities?
Absolutely. I think, some recent research has showed us that jobs in the renewable energy sector top the list for fastest growing job sectors, I think, in 12 states across the U.S. Just in the last few months. So absolutely, I think this is an indicator of success for the work that's been going on, and also shows you, what's the market driving force of leaders like San Antonio who are setting out these ambitious and innovative plans. And if we think about 200 plus cities embarking on these journeys, the ability to move these markets, I think, is really inspiring.
But, we always hear it's all about the Benjamins. Where's the dollars? Who's going to make the money? Once you set up your photovoltaic system, that's sustainable. And, people wonder, how is that going to continue to be economically exciting for investors? Or also with wind power, we don't have to frack to get the wind. The wind just shows up. So, is that a problem, Doug Melnick?
I think when we start talking about the shift to renewables, and this is something that Paula Gold-Williams has mentioned before at CPS, there's still some technological interventions that need to take place. The wind only blows, wind blows at night, the sun shines at night. How do we store this power? Because at the end of the day, as San Antonians, we want to make sure that whether we're a resident or a business, when we flip the switch, those lights come on. So I think where we are right now, with this plan, and again, this is the city's first climate plan. It's not going to have all of the answers. I think it sets that long-term target, sets us on that pathway. And we just need to continue the community dialogue and work through this process to make sure that we understand why we're doing it, we understand the benefits, and we take action as quickly as possible.
So when we say we have to understand what's happening, when we have people who, the cause of death on people's death certificate, it never ever says air pollution. Right. Or, the fact that they lived in a house that didn't have air conditioning, that all they had was a box fan. We come up with we're not really tracking the impact, the negativity of what's happening here. Do we need to, looking at those things?
Absolutely. And those are key indicators that were actually identified in the SA Tomorrow Sustainability Plan that was adopted a few years by council. Heat-related illnesses, asthma rates. I think we are tracking them, and we're working with the health departments, fire department, Office of Emergency Management. I think the key is providing that correlation to climate change, and then also being able to, really understand when we start again talking about economics. Yes, there are costs associated with this, but there's lots of costs of not taking action.
Let's go to Meredith on the phones, 210-614-8980, if you want to join our conversation. Hi, Meredith. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. My name's Meredith McGuire, and I was one of the volunteers who served on the technical working committees for this climate action plan. I'm very excited about the fact that you're finally getting out some of these issues to the business community, because they have to realize that we have a lot to lose, that doing business as usual is going to be a disaster. I want to mention one of the things that is relevant to this issue about heat waves and how we protect the city, because the sustainability plan that we've got for adaptation is really based upon an equity lens, where we take a look at how different parts of the community are going to be adversely affected. And so when we're taking a look at heat waves, we have to appreciate the fact that a lot of parts of our community haven't got the ability to protect themselves, and they need extra help. And one of the things that's kind of exciting is also that these kinds of things that we're suggesting as measures for these problems of heat waves are also then things that could contribute jobs, but also things that communities can do themselves. So it's really important, for example, that we have local groups of people working together so that people trust each other. So, for example, in case of a heat wave or something where you need to have evacuation, people know that they can call on their neighbors. People are able to work together, for example, to produce community food. There are a lot of ways by which I think this is going to improve the quality of our neighborhoods, not just the formal economy, but the informal parts of our economy.
All right, Meredith, thank you for the call. So as people, are people getting that message? Is this something that Nils Moe with the Urban Sustainability Directors Network, what is popular opinion? What are people really calling for with addressing climate change?
Yeah, I think speaking to Meredith's point, and I know Doug and his team has put a lot of thinking into the community resilience dialogue of their plan. So really engaging community members, community organizations, city departments, and really thinking about the social equity component of these plans, I think is absolutely key. And so I think overall we're seeing our city members across the U.S. and Canada making deep efforts to include their local environmental, social justice, and community organizations in these plans. We need to make sure that everybody's voice is in this plan, and I know Doug and his team has been working on that.
But do most people, have y'all done polling, Doug, mm-hmm. Melnick, what do most people in San Antonio do they understand climate change is happening, that it's real, it's not a hoax, and that there is the ability to do something about it.
Sure, and we've been doing surveying for about the past year. We've had a few surveys out throughout the entire process, and it's really interesting data. I mean, I think the first big thing is we've been tracking the demographics, and we want to make sure it's as representative as possible, and then where we see gaps, we go out to those neighborhoods and talk to folks. But what we're seeing is, you know, really, people get it, upwards, 50, 60, 70%, depending upon the question, support what we're doing. They believe that the city should be taking steps on climate. But more importantly, they believe in various elements of the plan. They want good air quality. They want good health outcomes. They want, mobility options is always at the top of the list. Even folks who are sort of in the minority who are questioning the science still, check the survey boxes saying we want clean air, we want clean water. So I think there's a lot of common ground here across the spectrum.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people would like to bike to work, but they don't want to have to run the risk. It's a huge risk to bike in the streets of San Antonio.
Exactly. And again, that's one of the things I think when I started talking about, there's a lot of things that are already in play within this plan. We've been talking about our mobility opportunities and challenges, increasing bikeability, increasing walkability, where do scooters fit in? So I think this all fits into this climate plan. So again, we're not starting from scratch. The conversation's begun, and I think we just need to keep it moving forward.
Taking another break. It's a one-minute break, and we'll be right back with more conversation about what's in the San Antonio climate plan, what's going to go to the city council, and your opportunity to weigh in on this before it does. The citizen reaction time is till February 25th, and you can call in right now. Tell us what you think and what you want. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source will be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio has a climate action and adaptation plan. It's the city's role in trying to address climate change. Of course, it's a huge plan. It's a massive climate. And what can one city do about that? But it's not just one city. There are multiple cities in America and Canada working together to come up with a sustainable solution, things that will keep our economies rolling along but address putting too much carbon into the atmosphere. What do you want to see happening? San Antonio has a climate action plan. 210-614-8980. Mario Bravo is on the air here. Hey, Mario Bravo from the Environmental Defense Fund. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you, David. Doug Melnick was just talking about health benefits from this plan, and I wanted to point out that San Antonio is not meeting the federal minimum air quality standards for ozone. But reducing greenhouse emissions through this plan has the added benefit of cleaning up our ozone. And so it's going to help us get out of non-attainment status. And I wanted to point to an economic study that was done by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality and ACOG that looked at the cost of being in non-attainment. And they found that it could be up to $21.5 billion for the marginal non-attainment designation that we already have, up to $28 billion if we don't clean up our air by the end of next year and get a moderate designation. And so this plan has the ability to save us that money. In addition, it has the ability to save us on costs from reducing the occurrence of children going to the emergency room for asthma attacks, the cost to schools for not having kids in school when they have those asthma attacks, and the cost to parents when they have to take their kids to, when they miss work and go and take their kids in to the hospital for these. So there's a lot of opportunities for us to save a lot of money through this climate plan.
All right, Mario Bravo, thank you for calling in with that from the Environmental Defense Fund. And Doug Melnick, kids with asthma, if you're a mom and you've got a child with asthma, you'd pretty much do anything to stop that from happening again. Or dad, you sit there and listen to watching your child fight for every breath.
Absolutely. And I don't think we can understress the public health aspects of climate change, whether it's reduced air quality, extreme heat, particularly for those folks, as we mentioned before, who are either homeless or can't afford air conditioning, the potential increase in vector-borne diseases because it's getting warmer, things that we wouldn't have expected locally we'll start seeing. So I think there really is a core preventative measure associated with this plan in terms of public health.
And so we're getting some emails, one from Twitter, about how much carbon pollution is coming from CPS Energy's coal plants, and an email from Wendell talking about CPS Energy's Flex Path is an unambitious plan that doesn't even mention reaching 100% energy goal. People are kind of like pushing back on CPS Energy, accusing the utility of being the most egregious climate polluter in San Antonio. But of course, I mean, it's the number one energy producer in San Antonio. They're going to be, doing these things. We invited CPS Energy to come join us today. They couldn't, but, you know, they are answerable to the public and they do have a plan, and they're responsible for having reliable energy and affordable energy for San Antonio.
Sure. And I think, the plan calls for, basically 100% carbon-free energy by 2050. It doesn't specifically set targets for CPS. I think what we're expecting from CPS over the next couple months is some economic analysis that they're doing. What are the fiscal implications of shutting down coal and natural gas plants? I think once we have that information, I think we can have a more robust dialogue with the community and stakeholders as far as what that implication is and what the what sort of timeline that we should be looking forward to decommissioning these plants.
And CPS Energy's Board of Trustees will hold a public input session about the plan on February 18th, and there's more information about that event on our website at tpr.org. Let's get Ron on the air. Ron, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to talk about energy conservation. Curiously enough, it was 50 years ago we did the original moonshot, and now we're talking about a moonshot again with a new green plan. And when Apollo 8 went out there and circled the moon, they looked back and saw the planet Earth for the first time hanging there in the dark, empty, cold space. And that was the beginning of the, the environmental movement and Earth Day and all that. And I think that we need to realize we live on a planet that has limited resources and look at our lifestyles and the energy that we waste as part of this conversation.
All right, Ron, thank you for that. And a good point. Nils Mo, you're looking at a national view with the Urban Sustainability Directors Network, working with San Antonio, other cities, coming up with climate action plans. But at the end of the day, doesn't it come to individuals accepting responsibility for their consumer choices? And you think that's really what's going to make the difference?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture. Again, I think it's all hands on deck with creating a policy that's going to support a climate smart future, working with our community to help envision what our cities, what we want San Antonio to look like in the next 20 to 30 years. So yeah, I think there's the human behavior piece is certainly one of those pieces of the puzzle.
And energy conservation. San Antonio has been great about water conservation. How are we doing on energy conservation, Doug Melnick?
So I think we're making steady progress. I think San Antonio continually adopts the latest international energy code to make sure our buildings are meeting that standard. I think CPS offers a tremendous number of rebates through their STEP program for energy efficiency. And quite frankly, their work with the STEP program has basically kept us from building a new, gas-powered plant through energy efficiency and demand reduction. So I think, San Antonio has really shown a lot of leadership. From that previous caller, I would just want to point out, it's very interesting that he mentioned the moonshot, because I was just thinking about that, the other day, that, when we, decided to go to the moon, we didn't say it's too difficult. We can't do it. We figured out how we're going to get there. And I think, dealing with this issue is very much the same thing. How are we going to do it? I think this country can come together and solve this challenge.
Stephen, hey, Stephen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to bring up three points I know were touched on during the workshops and the run-up to this. I just wanted to emphasize them a little bit. One, incentives for existing structures to reduce electric and water demand. Two, in building code adjustments for new construction. And three, education for architects and engineers to use low-embodied carbon and durable building materials in new construction.
Okay. And these are these things factors that are being put into the plan?
Yep. The plan identifies needing to continue conversations around using the latest technologies, striving towards some sort of zero net energy building. I think that the key is going to be really, as I mentioned earlier, being able to bring educational and technological support to our local business community so they understand that a lot of the things that we're talking about, they are cost-effective.
Nils Moe, gasoline-powered transportation, is that something that's going to be sunsetting on its very own just because the electric vehicles are becoming better, cheaper, and battery technology is getting better? Is that something that will happen on its own, or is that something that we're going to need the hand of government to usher that in?
I think we're starting to see the market drive this issue, but certainly one of the key levers for our cities, for our counties, for our states is to help accelerate that electric vehicle adoption across our communities. So we're seeing across the country, states, cities, corporate fleet owners, utilities, vehicle manufacturers, other private sector innovators, they really do have the power to substantially increase the rate of EV deployment, especially when they're working in concert together. So I think we're seeing some innovative policies that are coming out of the local level to help inspire and give the consumer that confidence that moving towards an electric vehicle is something that they can do and move towards.
And that's one of the categories in the climate plan, transportation acceleration of adoption of electric cars.
Yeah, and to clarify what's in the plan, there is that goal of 100% carbon-free transportation by 2050. When you dig into the details, the city is not going to get involved with the market or your own personal light truck or gas-powered vehicle. It's more, as Nils had mentioned, how do we help support a market transition through the provision of appropriately sited charging infrastructure or trying to find other avenues to support the market but not basically intervene in that market.
So how would the city support, push that along?
So I think the first thing that we're going to be doing is doing an assessment of our own city fleet, particularly focusing on our administrative sedans and how do we start transitioning to electric vehicles to sort of show that it can be done. Working with other large fleets to work with them to make that move, as we've seen CPS starting to make that move. And then I think really through working with CPS and private sector on the provision of charging infrastructure. And then at the end of the day, really working with auto dealers and stakeholders to identify what are the barriers to EV ownership and to figure out if there's ways of working together to try to overcome those.
So what's the future of this plan? We know we have a comment period now to the 25th, and then what happens? Yeah.
So basically, the plan is scheduled to go to City Council April 11th for consideration. What I would urge listeners is, however you feel about this plan, please weigh in. You can visit saclimateready.org. There's a page where you can view the plan. There's many avenues to engage. As was mentioned, on the 18th, there's a CPS public meeting. The next day, February 19th in the evening, we're going to be having a public event at the Central Library. There's a place where you can just submit a request for us to come out and talk to your neighborhood group or your business, and we'll come out and talk. But we need folks to weigh in, and particularly those folks in the middle, particularly those folks who aren't on the left or on the right, everyone else in the middle. If this is something that you think we should be doing, please let us know.
Doug Melnick is the Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio's Office of Sustainability. Nils Moe is the Managing Director of the Urban Sustainability Directors Network. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.